The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, she's Blue Peter's longest serving presenter, and she is now adding another string to her bow by becoming a children's author. Connie Hook, good morning to you from London and welcome on the programme.
Thank you, Maggie. Lovely to be on.
And lovely to speak to you. And the name of the book is Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World. This is going to be the first of a 3-book deal that you've signed up with for a children's series. And Cookie is kind of based on you, isn't she? Tell us a little bit about Cookie.
Sort of. I mean, she's a bit like a cross between Bridget Jones and Wimpy Kid. And she sees the absurd in everyday life, which, let's face it, life seems to be getting more absurd by the minute. So she's got a very creative mind and a creative imagination. So there's lots of cartoons and comic strips throughout, so showing her flights of fancy. But then she's got quite a practical, logical mind. She's very into science. She's very into long words. So she's into knowledge. So it's kind of stealth education. A funny romp, but also there's really good social awareness, values of inclusivity and diversity, and some STEM learning as well, which is science, technology, engineering.
Yeah, I mean, you don't leave much out, to be honest, in fairness, Connie. Like, you know you've gone around everything there, really, haven't you? You've touched bases on all the important things. First of all, let's point about the diversity, I suppose, because Cookie is based on you, and so we don't see this in the book, of course, because the illustrations are simply in black and white, but she is a girl of colour.
Yeah, so it was quite important to me to do the illustrations in black and white, so because actually, although she's from an ethnic minority background, that isn't the focus of the book. And I remember when I got my job on Blue Peter, there was a lot of press coverage saying sort of first British Bangladeshi presenter, first, you know, Asian on Blue Peter. And I was sort of very much like, but I'm normal as well. And so Cookie is just like any 9-year-old girl. She's inquisitive. She's funny. She's quirky. She's bright. But then secondary is the fact that she's from an ethnic minority background, because, you know, we're all the same essentially, but there's lots of different little things that define us. But it's always affairs of the heart. It's like friendships, falling out with your best friend, arguing with your siblings. Those sort of things are common to everyone, no matter where you are brought up, no matter where you live. You know, affairs of the heart are what strike through, and everything else is set dressing. And I often say that, you know, we're all minorities in our own way. There's always situations where we feel other, but we make up this massive, amazing melting pot majority, and that's sort of to be celebrated, because it makes the majority more interesting. You know, stronger together is the mantra, I guess.
That's a good mantra to have, Connie. A lovely mantra. You mentioned there in the front cover, in the inside cover of the book, you know, when you were growing up, you felt a little bit like you didn't quite fit in, and that maybe lingers in the background to this day. You say you were the small brown girl in the big white suburb. Has you know, do you think for small brown girls or small brown boys in white suburbs in Britain, has it changed? Like, is it better for them?
I think, you know, like I say, sort of the small brown girl in the white suburb is a metaphor for so much. So it could be that, I don't know, you have an Irish accent and you're in a workplace in the city in central London where the trading floor has sort of very, you know, received pronunciation accents. There's always situations where people feel like they don't quite fit in. And what people often fail to see is a different background, a new perspective, another pair of eyes on a situation can often enhance it, because you see it at a different level almost. For instance, a lot of studies have shown that women in the workplace can often bring a you know, a new form of empathy, a new understanding of things, because we see things differently from men, for example. So, you know, I do think, especially in London, it's much more of a melting pot than when I was growing up. And progress is happening all the time, which is only a good thing. But there are so many sort of different, you know, I often say there are so many different ways you can feel other. And we live in a society where I think judgment is more rife than ever, whether it's judgment because you're not wearing fashionable clothes, or, you know, as a mum, I'm often running around and there'll be some splot on my trousers that one of my children has, you know, know, managed to put there or whatever. And I think we are in a society where there's so much judgment that people want to fit in. The amount of times I've been to someone's house and it looks like a show home, and then I think, uh-oh, my house has got toys everywhere and crumbs on the floor, whatever.
Yeah, but you know as well, Connie, that when you, you know, if you were to go back there and surprise them the following day, it wouldn't be a show home.
That's true, I know. And we live in this Instagram society where everything is so curated, you're right. And it's probably all got filters on and like airbrushing and photoshopping, you're absolutely right. But yeah, so the book is trying to sort of bring things sort of around a central sort of point of we're all the same underneath all the set dressing, if you see what I mean.
And go on.
Mm. No, and hopefully that'll strike through, because I was just going to say that children, they're a blank canvas. You know, when you're in your primary years and some of your secondary years, you're shaping, and you only know what society teaches you. But by the time you're in your 20s, you know, you're kind of formed. In your 30s, you need years of therapy to undo what's going on in your head. And so our children are the future, and if we can get the right values in them, if they're altruistic, if they know that helping each other brings happiness, not helping yourself necessarily, wherever they go in life, whether they're president of the USA or CEO of a FTSE 100 company, hopefully they'll take that with them and help to make the world a better place, as it were, because studies have showed that reading brings empathy to people more than other mediums. So if kids, you know, if we can get our kids right, the world is going to be a better place.
There's a lot of, you mentioned about the STEM there, the science, the tech, the engineering, the maths. So you were very interested in that when you were a child as well. Why is, you know, Cookie's very interested in science and all this sort of, all those kind of subjects. And you've put in a bit of the STEM learning, like you say, a little bit of subliminal sort of teaching going on in there. Did you find it easy as a girl, I suppose, to be interested in those kind of subjects, to be a bit of a geeky girl?
You know, what was different for me is because my parents came from a background where they came over to the UK in the 1960s with sort of dreams of me and my two sisters becoming an engineer, an accountant, a doctor. You know, STEM was the revered profession in their background. And a lot of Asia feels that way. You know, you're very lucky if you get a good education, and if you can go into a STEM profession, then you know that you've made it. And then they came over here, and I think in some walks of life over here, it's sort of being on the telly or being on a reality show or, you know, being fashion. There's different values to some extent, and we have a real dearth of people going into STEM professions, girls especially. And so I'm just trying to sort of reverse what the cool thing is in the book. So science is really cool in the book, and Cookie's always sort of saying that, you know, without science we'd still be cavemen living, you know, in rabbit skins with sticks, because science is all progress in society. You know, we're on the radio now because of innovation, engineering, tech, you know, the amazing things that can happen. Planes can fly, we can go to space, you know. And in a weird way, science gets a bad PR. It almost needs rebranding. So we need young kids to get that sort of excitement about it. And the younger you start it, even if they don't quite understand, it's often a very small thing that can tap through to the core of a child, which can ignite a passion, or which they can take, you know, with them through life. But it needs to be done while they're young.
And I think if you go to the appendix in your book, you've got some fantastic little ideas there, actually. And anything that will create a bit of a mess is always going to interest kids in it. And in your appendix at the back of the book, you've got, well, it's Cookie really telling people, you know, how to do different little experiments. And of course, how to make a lemonade fountain with the fizzy lemonade and the Mento mints. And, you know, and it's lovely. And the way then, you know, Cookie describes it, it's just lovely. And I can totally see kids getting involved in this and wanting to do these kind of things at home. That's lovely. Do you do that sort of thing with your own kids at home? How old are yours, Connie? You've got two.
So mine are five. Yeah, mine are 5 and 7. And I know from even being a child myself, actually, that the more interactive something is, the more engaging it is. So things like the little comic strips and the cartoons, they add a different level. And you'll have seen there's things like graphs and Venn diagrams in there. But instead of making them sort of boring and number crunching, like there's a friendship graph, and Cookie correlates the hours she spends with her best friend with her amount of happiness. And it's a positive correlation. You know, so it's sort of thinking of new ways to bring things to children. And the books that I loved growing up were often ones where I'd really love the pictures. Or I remember I loved this book called The Black Hand Gang, where you could solve the crimes yourself by looking for clues in the pictures. And I used to like choose your own adventure books. So all the experiments in the back and the explanations, they're all sort of trying to draw the reader into the book, as it were. And Cookie explains the science behind the experiments, but very much in her voice, as opposed to sort of in a textbook voice. So she'll explain why the Mentos react with the lemonade to give that fountain, but she sort of says it in Cookie speak, as it were.
Yeah, which is so relatable for young kids, you know, to get into. These are the first children's books you've written, and there will be two more cookie books at least anyway, because it's a three book series.
Yes,
but
right.
you've done a bit of writing as well. You helped your husband Charlie Brooker write Black Mirror, which is the hugely successful TV series. What was it like writing something like that, and then in comparison to writing for kids?
Well, you know what's interesting is that they've both got a fundamental similarity, even though looking at it at face value, Black Mirror seems to be the antithesis of a book that's for 7 to 12-year-olds. But basically, both things extrapolate situations to the extreme. So Black Mirror is set in near future scenarios often, where you take something that's happening in today's society and then you look at the extreme version of it. So, you know, what happens if everyone in society was on social media and everyone judged each other through likes and dislikes, and you know, that was how you lived your life in society. And for instance, that's actually happening in China. They have a system of credit rating, so all citizens can have a credit rating depending on how late they are for appointments. You know, if they don't turn up to the doctors, they get marked down. It's based on their purchases, so on and so forth. And so these things are sort of happening in society, but then you take it to the extreme. And weirdly, Cookie's mind thoughts, she has, like I said, these flights of fancy. So she'll be in a situation and she always thinks, what if? And she will imagine like the worst case scenario. And I think, you know, people, it really strikes a chord with people to sort of go off on those tangents, you know, what if, hypothetical scenarios. Mm. In our household, Black Mirror is, you know, omnipresent, because there's always a Black Mirror being edited or being written or being researched. So, yeah, I kind of live, eat and breathe Black Mirror. And it is really fun. It's, you know, it's so interesting.
Was it good fun writing with your husband? I mean, is it difficult to sit down and write something as a married couple?
Well, now we've got kids, it really is difficult, because of a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old with boundless energy. They're both boys, can I just say. And literally, I don't think I had grey hairs before children, and now my head is rife with them. But yeah, no, it's definitely fun, because what's brilliant is that you can pick up where you leave off. You know, you can come back to it all times because you're living together in the same house. You don't have to sort of pitch up to a meeting in town or, you know, booking days in the writer's room. So that was really great. And also, you know, I just finished doing I was in the midst of doing Extra Factor, that's right. Extra Factor, and you know, so writing something, for instance, about a talent show, you know, so there's a panel of judges.
15 million it's merits, isn't it?
That's
the Black Mirror episode
that I'm referring. Yeah, the one I was referring to before was Nosedive. Yeah, and this is, sorry, I should say, an episode called 15 million merits, which is this society in which everyone is sort of glued to screens and they pedal on these exercise bikes to get their exercise, because essentially they're just sat stationary watching screens, which isn't great for burning off calories unless you're, you know, doing some energy exertion. But the way out of this society is to become a person on the screen. So they have these massive auditions in a sort of X Factor Britain's Got Talent style. But it was quite interesting doing that, because I was sort of on both sides of the coin, you know. So one minute I'm sort of, I don't know, filming interviews with Simon Cowell and the other sort of panelists on the panel, and then the next minute is writing things.
You're
about
writing
it in secret.
Secret, so, and that also was the extreme, and I suppose the dystopian kind of, you know, but yet, as you mentioned there, the story about China could probably easily happen. You never know in the future.
People do say it's funny the amount of things that seem to have happened on different episodes, whether it's, I don't know, prime ministers and pigs or liking things on a social media platform.
You took you kind of took off, your career took off and you became very successful at a young age, but, you know, before really the internet took hold. So so you've kind of, you know, a bit like myself as well, you've kind of grown up with it, and but I suppose not necessarily that it's part of, it was part of you when you were a child. Where, you know, you mentioned the Instagram society and we were talking there about the story earlier, you know, that, that in the top four channels now, YouTube and Netflix are in there, you know, edging up towards BBC One in Britain. Where do you see it going? And I suppose, how do you, as parents of young kids, how do you guys manage the internet and all of those kind of social media sites?
Yeah, very good question. I mean, I see it going personally into a world where everything will be via the internet and streaming will be the thing. Because if you look at the statistics that you were talking about earlier, young people are the ones more and more that don't watch real-time TV. And if you think about it, the only things that you need to watch in real-time TV are something like the news. Well, we have news channels anyway, which can easily, you know, be a streaming thing. And then also reality shows, because, you know, you want to know, oh, what are the votes today? Mm. And apart from that, more or less, you know, when you watch drama series, documentaries, people are doing that more and more through streaming. And the demographic watching real-time TV is getting older and older and older. And streaming platforms are getting more successful. So I do see a world in which, and I could be wrong, I have no idea, where the BBC, for instance, and everything become platforms, as it were. And as for policing our own children, I mean, they're 5 and 7 at the minute, but I have to say, already, you know, the other day, I don't know if, have you ever heard of Dan TDM?
Dan,
he's a YouTuber.
TDM. No.
He's a, well, that's probably because you're not of primary school age.
Yes.
He's a YouTuber that is the second highest earning YouTuber, I think, after this guy called Ryan, who has a channel called Ryan's Toy Review. He's 7 years old and lives in America. But basically, we took them to see Dan TDM at Wembley Arena. It was absolutely sold out with, you know, 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds.
So he was doing his YouTube
idol
on stage.
Yes. And I was like, how's he going to transfer this to on stage? And literally, it's Wembley Arena watching kids that were chosen from the audience gaming. And these kids were just loving it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the shape of things to come. Yeah. He'd sold out all of his tour dates. And I think the tour company had wanted him to do more, but he's a multi-millionaire and doesn't even need to. But, you know, it's this whole world in which there's loads of people that young people know who they are, but they could walk down the street and older people like myself wouldn't have a clue. And, you know, I do worry a bit about when my kids are going to be old enough to have mobile phones of their own and that, you know, it can be policed in the right way. But it's as with everything, you know, we need to make sure that parenting, that laws, that society keeps up with the rate of technological change. Because if you think about it, all the problems with the internet, you know, cyberbullying is something that has, you know, bullying has existed for years. It's been in playgrounds, but now it's online. Mm. The nature of it can change. And same with, I don't know, internet chat rooms. You know, there's always been the worry that, you know, I remember going to school and seeing videos that were telling us, you know, if somebody offers you sweets, yes, make sure that you don't go off with them.
With, and so with exactly that kind scenario of voice as well. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I know. That was, it really was, yeah, wasn't, yeah, it? And then, you know, stuff like grooming, all of these things are things that may have existed in society, but the fact that the internet has come along means that we have to be more vigilant about how we police and what we say to children to make them aware.
And what about what your kids say to you? Because I understand that there was a bit of confusion in your house recently when when dad was called something not and it wasn't dad.
Yeah, no. So our youngest came into the kitchen not so long ago and he wanted to say something to Charlie. And then he said, Alexa, I mean, Daddy. And that was kind of like, uh-oh, this is the shape of things to come, is it? You know, and I do, you know, you read about things in the paper about court cases where, you know, it was, are we allowed to submit Alexa recordings or not as part of this court case? And it's like, you know, you don't know what is being tapped into, whether it's, you know, sort of Cambridge Analytica going into your Facebook, or whether it's, I don't know, a security camera that's just recording your every move as you, you know, walk along. I you know, there's so much technology, and there's such a quick rate of progress. It's just making sure that we're on top of it and we know what's going on, because ignorance is bliss. And I remember the days when my mum used to say to me, you know, Connie, can you set the video recorder? And I'd literally be like, ugh, you don't know how to set a video recorder, mum. And now I look at my 5-year-old and my 7-year-old and they know how to sort of, you know, rig up an Xbox to the internet and play with someone that's in Alaska or something. And I'm like, oh, I am that person. But they need to ask my child to do stuff for me.
Things have changed, Connie, but I'm very pleased that books are still very, very, very much there and very important for kids. And hopefully,
it's so important.
Cookie is going to be a great one for you, because it's a lovely, lovely book, and I know kids are going to enjoy it, not just for the illustrations, but for that, for the story, and for the little appendix at the back as well, with all those little science
stealth
projects.
Learning.
Stealth learning, stealth learning. Connie Huck, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And the Most Annoying Boy in the World is out tomorrow. We'll take a quick break.